This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What is going on? It is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you here on Thursday night. One night, about 24 hours after the Los Angeles Clippers lost Game 5 by 30. 123-93 final. It was not pretty at all. I'm your host, Brandon Marcus, joined by a special guest co-host, Shane Young at Young NBA, extraordinary writer for Forbes. He is a man that's been covering the Suns for a while. The Suns are out. He's a man that used to cover the Clippers. The Clippers are out. So instead of asking, how are you, Shane? It's, what are you doing now, Shane?
It's pretty miserable, I'm not going to lie. I mean, when all you have to do is watch games from afar and there's nowhere to really go, it's a bit crazy. But, man, I appreciate the invite and the intro just to kind of maybe write the Clippers obituary here. So not sure. I'm not too optimistic about Friday.
Yeah, neither am I. And for those people that have been listening to this podcast, they know that I've basically been writing the Clippers obituary for the last 2 months. From what I've seen on the floor, and I said they probably didn't have much of a chance in the postseason, especially if Kawhi ended up being hurt. And what do you know? Kawhi's hurt. Everyone's saying, oh, maybe the Clippers are better off. And I said, you know what? They looked better with him in game one, and they probably would have been better off without him in games two and game three because he was hurt. But the moral of the story is that whether it's with a hurt Kawhi or without Kawhi, this Clippers team just has a lot of holes and some problems. But before we get into that ball game, Shane is on the podcast because our friend Matt Matawarin, my co-host, finally had his baby this morning. So a big congratulations to Matt and his lovely wife for having their first child this morning. Matt said it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, so he is currently in the hospital with the baby. Mom and baby are doing great, so our best wishes go out to the Matawarin family as we now have a new Clippers fan that is going to be welcomed into misery, just like the rest of us Clippers fans, coming in with a series 3-2. Wouldn't have it any other way, Shane.
Yeah, I got to say congrats to Matt real quick. Congrats, man. That's awesome. First time hearing about it, so that's great to hear. And I will say, if we are failing as a podcast family, Brandon, if we don't get his toddler a shirt that says, how the heck are you? Like, yes. We got to. That's got to happen.
Oh, man, that really, yeah, that would be good. Matt, I was talking to Matt, actually, and I was asking him how everything went. And he's like, you know, I was just telling jokes, keeping everything lively, and with the nurses there during the labor. And I'm like, yeah, wouldn't have it any other way. That's typical Matt Matawarin. It's just what a gentleman and what a funny dude. All right, before we get to the podcast, folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, Shane, speaking of starting, where should we start? Goodness gracious. Yesterday was bad and not unexpected at all to see James Harden come back down to earth after his incredible game 4 performance. You knew that Jason Kidd and company were going to make a concentrated effort to slow him down, and they did. And Harden had a game that is certainly one to be forgotten. 2-for-12 from the field, 1-of-7 from three. Pretty solid in the first half, I thought. He didn't do much scoring, but I think he had 7 assists with 1 turnover in the first half. Second half, 3 turnovers, 0 assists. Absolutely miserable performance. But I'm more concerned with what we saw from Paul George. People who have been listening to this podcast know that I have been crushing him in terms of his inability to show consistency. And a 4-for-13 game in 33 minutes in a game the Clippers needed to have, and he just disappeared completely. I want to go up PG and Harden. I want to offer this take to you on Harden, and then I want to get your take on it, and then we can kind of go from there. My take on James Harden is that I'm not going to sit here like the rest of the media and slam James Harden for being a disappearing act in the postseason like he did previously at different stops. Because, A, he was really the only player that actually cared to do anything apart from Zoo for the first four games, consistently, offensively. So I'm not going to go and bash him for game five after he just won the Clippers game four when, oh, might I add, PG said to him, you go win us the ball game, I'll get the stops. Because that's exactly what you want your number one guy to say to anybody else, is some for somebody else to go win the ball game. So I'm not going to go after Harden there. Also not going to go after Harden because he is slated to be the number three guy on this roster. Kawhi and PG are supposed to be one and two. Harden's supposed to set up the offense. He's being asked to fill a role now as a scorer that he frankly is not as much of anymore. And as a facilitator, he was the engine to this offense. Without Kawhi, he becomes this necessary scorer that I just don't think he is, and it's not what this team is supposed to have him as. So I'm going to give him some slack here with this performance. I just can't cut slack for PG. I just can't do it when he just goes and disappears like this in two of the five games in this series. I can't do it. So that's my take on PG / Harden. Curious where you stand on James, and we can get into PG as well.
I'm like 90% of the way there with you on James, specifically with Harden, because I think you're right, and it always makes me laugh so hysterically whenever I hear, you know, Ty Lue or anyone for that matter say, yeah, that's why we went and got Harden. Like, this is what he's here for. Because whenever there's games where Kawhi is not playing, I'm like, well, that inherently is just a failure because you know that James Harden is not Houston James Harden. So to say that he is just going to be thrown into that role for playoff games whenever that was not the reason he was brought there initially is pretty comical, because it's not like he can turn back the clock. It's not like he's LeBron or Steph or anyone that can, for one game or two games or three games in a row, go back to that prime version. You cannot expect that. He is not fast. He is not quick. He's not he's just not decisive anymore. Like, it's just, there's too many possessions with James Harden where it goes down to 4 or 3 on the shot clock, and there's nothing happening. And then it's, oh, step back or get into the floater range. And, you know, let's be honest, he just wasn't hitting the floaters on Wednesday night like he was in game four in Dallas. So, you know, I'm there. I'm not once did I think to bash James Harden. You have to expect that the game five James Harden is going to show up. And that's what happened, frankly, with Paul George, someone that's, I think he's a little bit younger than James, someone that is, I don't know if PG's in his prime, but to me, I think for 80% of the year, he was playing the best basketball I've ever seen Paul George play. So from that standpoint, I guess it's his prime in my mind. For someone at that stage of his career to be so just up and down, the most inconsistent superstar in the league, and I don't think it's close. I mean, one night he is a top 7-8 player in the world. The next night it's looking like Dante DiVincenzo out here being a role player, and I'm not even joking. It's crazy. I didn't even know he said that. Go win us the game. I'll just defend. Mm-hmm. That's abysmal from your number one, 1A, whatever you want to call him. I'm watching last night's game, man, and I texted you. I was like, I can't defend this anymore because he's one of my favorite players of all time, a player I've covered when I was 20 years old, and to see what he's doing in his early 30s, you would think that he would just take this series over. They don't really have anyone that can stop him on Dallas. He can shoot right over the top of everybody, can blow right past Luka. There shouldn't be no reason he's not taking taking 24, 25 shots a game. He's just very passive, and it's disappointing.
Yeah, and to kind of put a bow on the Harden thing, what's interesting is I get what you're saying. At the same time, though, with James, you do go and trade for him because he does raise your potential floor without Kawhi on the floor, and he raises your ceiling with Kawhi on the floor. But without him, it gives you a chance to win a game like he did in game one and like they did in game four. If you don't have Harden on the floor, you probably don't win at least one of those two ball games. So you go and get Harden to set up the offense primarily, no doubt about that. Number two, to have somebody on the floor that can go and score and win you a game like he did in game four. So I get what you're saying in terms of if you're going and getting him and saying, all right, yeah, that's going to be the reason why you're going to win. It's going to raise you. It's going to become make you a playoff contender because he can score the basketball. For sure, I understand that. He's not the scorer he once was. But at the same time, he still can score the basketball like he did in that stretch at the end of game four. So he certainly has the ability to. But exactly, that's why I said even with Kawhi out and you have Harden healthy, you're still not winning anything. I mean, getting Harden all of a sudden doesn't mean that if Kawhi or PG were out that you would suddenly win at all. Like, you need all three of those guys to be healthy to win the NBA title. And with those guys, all three of them, if they're not healthy, then you have no chance anyways.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. I mean, I don't know how many times you and I and Matt talked about it. It's like there's no point of forecasting the playoffs until you know who's going to be on the floor. Yeah. Because if Kawhi is not on the floor, it's a wrap. And I think we all said that, like, there's no scenario where Dallas loses the series if Kawhi misses 70% of it.
Yeah.
You know, and really he's only played what, a game and a half? I mean, I don't even know if you can count game three. It was so horrific to watch.
Yeah, no, exactly. And what's interesting is that we've talked about how you can't really talk about this team as a playoff contender without the three of them healthy. And there are times throughout the season where the Clippers would lose a game when Kawhi was sitting. And I said, it doesn't matter. I don't want to go back and evaluate this game because the Clippers are not the team that can win it all without him. So there's no point evaluating a game that he doesn't play in because this is not the team that the Clippers need in order to win it all. So I did that several times throughout the regular season where I was like, all right, I don't want to discuss this. The Clippers play like trash. They didn't have Kawhi. If they don't have Kawhi, they're not winning anyways. And that's exactly what happened. Now with PG, it's mind-blowing because you could have the performance that he had in the first half of game number four, and then he disappeared in game five and in the second half of game four as well, apart from that bonkers three. But you look at the talent and you say, I have never seen someone that is as good as Paul George and as good of a scorer as Paul George that can just become a complete ghost. And I don't understand how that happens for an individual, because you would think without Kawhi Leonard, Paul George would say, okay, I'm going to go and take a bunch of shots and I'm going to try and see what happens here. I mean, Justin Wilson, LA Clippers film, time and time again came on this podcast and said, I want PG shooting at least 10 threes a ball game. Said that was the number. He shot just six yesterday, just six. Yeah. And he only had 13 shots. He had one less shot than James Harden. One more shot than James Harden. Yeah.
And to be clear, we're talking about 10 threes in a regular season game.
And you get more minutes, exactly. And you have more minutes in a postseason game. Spot on, Shane. So it could be closer to 12 or 13 threes that he should be putting up. He had two more shot attempts than Russell Westbrook. One more shot attempt than Paul George. Like, if you're going to be the number one guy, you've got to demand the ball. And there was a stretch, I think, in the third quarter where he didn't, I think he only had two shot attempts in the first 7 or 8 minutes. It's inexcusable for a player that wants to be a star and be paid like one to just completely disappear and not be that alpha male that demands the basketball. I just don't get it. He has all the talent in the world, but he just disappears way too often.
I just think it's ironic. The irony I'm hearing of, from a guy that wants to be that star and the guy that is demanding, or I guess quietly demanding behind closed doors, a max contract, because why else would the extension not be signed unless he's demanding a max? Mm-hmm. If you want that, yet you're going to show up like this. It can't, you can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. Doesn't make much sense. I don't understand how he can think that he can go ahead and determine his future and that he's going to be this. I mean, he's going to be a coveted free agent because, and I think Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo discussed this, and sometimes their basketball takes aren't great, but the one point they made that was right is that Russillo's like, at all times, when you have a star, a guy like Kyrie, a guy like PG, they can have all of this stuff on or off the court that you've got issues with, but because they've got the talent, someone will trade for them. And it's true. It's true. PG or someone will acquire him. PG has the talent. Like, there are GMs that look at him and say, holy shit, this is a guy that can go and score 30, 35 points in a playoff game. I want to sign that guy because there aren't a ton of them. The issue is that he disappears. So he's not proven anything in the postseason in terms of winning. I mean, he's gotten this team, obviously, the Western Conference Finals, and we'll always appreciate that. But I just do not understand the mindset of a guy that is the number one option with his number one out in Kawhi Leonard, and he becomes that de facto number one that just doesn't act like it. It blows my mind, and I don't know if I'll ever understand it.
A lot of shots last night. I watched every shot attempt right before we got on here, all the Clippers, until it became garbage time. But all of PG's looks, for the most part, like just things that he was throwing up at the rim that made no sense, heavily contested. Like, he acted like he was Kyrie Irving last night. Like, just thinking he was going to be Houdini and get something to fall at the rim through traffic. Not a lot of clean jumpers, not a lot of clean step backs. Like I said, he often has smaller defenders on him or like-sized defenders on him. And he has some of the best separation tools in the league, just wasn't utilizing those. Now, on the other hand, I will say, like, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because, like, we often say, oh, we want rim pressure. We want you to put your head down and draw extra defenders and attack the paint. So he's doing that. It's just, I don't think he has a plan. When he gets into the paint, Brandon, it seems like he doesn't have a plan at all.
Yeah, it just seems like a guy that doesn't know how to be that number one option. And it's strange because if I wrote down my numbers and stats correctly, I think he only had one shot attempt in the second quarter. I think he was 1 of 5 is what I wrote down in the first quarter. And I wrote down that he was 2 for 6 at halftime. So he was 1 for 1 in the second quarter. That's it. I mean, you look at the end of the first quarter, PG, or rather the end of the first half, PG, I wrote down 2 of 6, Zoo 6 of 7, Man 5 of 7, Harden 2 of 9. So at least Harden was taking shots, for better or for worse. But, I mean, come on. I mean, Harden and PG, you look at Harden had 2 field goals made with 4 turnovers. PG had 4 field goals made with 3 turnovers. Like, that ain't it. That ain't the recipe. So those two guys certainly should shoulder a ton of the blame for yesterday's loss.
Really do wish we had a feed where we could, you know, hear what Ty is saying to these guys, because I'm, you know, last night, this is a first for me, right? And I'm on this podcast all the time praising Ty Lue, but last night I'm kind of like, at what point did we just look at Ty for not, and you know, we don't have any idea what's going on in the huddles or locker room at halftime. We are not privy to those conversations, but like at a certain point, the head coach has to challenge these guys and say, Paul, what in the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm sure stuff like that has happened, but you would think, man, like being together with this group, with this head coach for 4 years now, 4 or 5, PG and Ty, you would think these games wouldn't happen. So at some point, maybe it's just like Ty's not pushing them enough. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because Ty Lue is one of the best coaches in the NBA, and it's just strange because I'm pretty sure it was 13 or 14 straight possessions. The Clippers either had a missed shot or a turnover in that third quarter. Like, that's unacceptable. And you know what part of that is? And it's going to take us into our break, and then we'll talk about it after the break. Part of it is that it's coaching. Because if you have a time where your team is not making a shot, you know an easy way to get a made shot? You go to your center. It's a very easy way to get a made shot, especially your center that's was 6 of 7. In the first half. And you know what you shouldn't do? Bring on a point guard that's 0 for the series in Russell Westbrook. God. I mean, there's a couple of big mistakes there. I'm going to leave you a couple of seconds to think about it as we take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about Zoo and Russell Westbrook right after this.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
All right, let's get into it. I mean, I know you wanted to talk about it. Before we get into Westbrook, because I don't know how long we can go on that one, let's talk about Zoo, because he is a guy that frankly has been the Clippers' best player in this series. He's been the Clippers' most consistent player in this series. He has been their best scorer in this series, which is something that seems very unexpected. But he has been a dog. All year, Shane, we have been big Zoo fans. We have said he is the third most important Clipper behind PG and Kawhi, and then Harden came along, so he probably became the fourth most important Clipper, but then again, he probably is top two. Either way, Zoo is a guy that doesn't get the respect he deserves. Finally, people are realizing in this series how good he can be offensively and defensively. It's no surprise that Mann and Zoo sit the last couple of minutes of the first half, and Plumlee and Westbrook don't stop a damn thing, and Dallas extends the lead to 10 at the half. So then in the third quarter, like I mentioned, Clippers can't score. They keep turning it over, and they're just not giving Zoo touches at all. Zoo in that first half, I mentioned earlier, he was 6 of 7 for 13 points. He ended for the game 7 of 8 for 15 points. He had one shot attempt. One, Shane. One shot attempt after that first half. And I'm pretty sure it was a tip-in. I don't think he got any real design looks to get him easy buckets. So that's where I agree with you earlier, that certainly you have to point the blame at Ty Lue, because goodness gracious, man, Zoo should have gotten the basketball way more in that second half.
Yeah, and I think it's just not in Ty's DNA as a coach. I mean, when's the last time we saw a Ty offense go primarily through post-ups? Never happened in Cleveland unless it was LeBron freaking James doing it, and he's the best post-up player of all time, probably next to Shaq. And it never happened with the early stages of the Clippers because Zoo wasn't at that level yet, and the offense was primarily triangle based with Kawhi posting up. Like, it just never happened. So I understand that that's probably not what he believes is a strong suit offensively, but you have to tailor your system to the personnel. I've always said that. And you would think that one of the smartest coaches in the world would think that. But again, I mean, that's where a ton, I'm with you. Like, if you see that it's not flowing well, or you just gave up an 8-0 run, you call timeout, you draw up some stuff. It's not even drawing up some stuff. It's like, let's get into some motion and some movement to clear some room for Zubats, then dish the ball down to him. You don't have to come out of the timeout and just dump the ball down to him. Like, you can disguise some stuff to kind of clear the lane for him. But, like, again, didn't really get those post-up opportunities in the second half, and didn't really get, like, a lot of pick-and-roll touches where he is clearly rolling to the rim and has a lane. So, and that's how you open up more threes, is establish the inside, play inside-out ball. So I agree, and I'm not, like, a store. Like, I don't like archaic offenses. Like, I don't want 45 Zubac post-ups a game. That would be unwatchable. I would probably not like this team if that happened, but I do agree. I mean, you know what he's shooting this season or this series? 61% Zubats is a career high in the playoffs. So again, like, no one on Dallas can handle him at all. And really, like, that's how you draw fouls. That's how you get Dallas into foul trouble. You just continually abuse their smaller, weaker defenders, and they just did not make them pay enough. So totally agree.
And to your point about working inside out, you look at the first half where Maxi Kleba had more threes than the entire Clippers team. So if you're able to get Zoo going, it generates good looks for guys on the perimeter, and certainly good looks were missed. I mean, Amir Coffey missed a couple of open shots. PG missed a couple of open shots. Norm Powell missed a couple of open shots. So the Clippers just couldn't hit the backside of a barn yesterday. They shot 26% from three, but it helps generate better looks for sure if the Clippers were able to work Zoo in. So I think they made a massive mistake there. And then they made a massive mistake playing Russell Westbrook as many minutes as he did. He played 16 minutes, and frankly, it was probably about 12 minutes too much. 2 of 11 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3. I mean, he really has barely hit a two-point shot this entire series. The Dallas Mavericks are purposely leaving him wide open, and the Clippers are playing 5-on-4 on offense. And it's a very tough way to score baskets when you're playing 5-on-4 and you're allowing somebody to be a floater and help out defensively. And in this case, Russell Westbrook was absolutely terrible. You can go back to the game in which he picked up those two technical fouls. I mean, ever since then, he has been borderline, and not borderline, he has been horrendous and should not be getting minutes if he's going to be playing like this. And you look at what happened, I mentioned it, when he came in at the end of the first half, they couldn't stop anybody. And then you look in the second half where Russ came in, immediately he missed two shots at the rim, and it was during that 14-0 run and the 23-point lead that Dallas extended to, and Russ was 0-for-8 at that point. So he just could not hit a shot. He played far too much. And at some point, Ty Lue needs to pull the plug on him. And it's difficult because Russ had his moments this season and this series where he provided energy to a team that needed it. He provided defense, especially when they would go small. He's a guy that actually cared and gave the energy night to night, where you can't say the same for almost everybody on this roster, that he came and brought you energy. But sometimes that energy is too chaotic, and it doesn't work in a series like this. And I think the Clippers have a Russell Westbrook problem. They have a point guard problem. I know you've been a very big proponent of the Clippers being okay without a point guard. I think we've seen this year that the Clippers are better with James Harden. And in this case, they just don't have a backup point guard that's viable when James Harden's not on the floor. And he's been terrible. And so I'm curious to get your take on him.
There was a possession last night. I have it pulled up. 8:32 left in the second quarter, so you can go back and watch this at some point, Brandon. But Terrence Mann is posting up Luka Doncic on the left block, or on the left elbow, I should say. Russell Westbrook is in the left corner. The spacing is absolutely pathetic. From a system and a coaching staff that value spacing and will tell you about spacing more than hardly any other team in the NBA, maybe outside of Boston. That's the only team that I really see that cares about spacing to this degree. That's always been Tyler's thing. Like, Maxi Kleba, who is not guarding Russ, but guarding Russ, quote unquote, is fully in front of Terrence Mann on this possession. It's just like they're playing 4-on-5, and it's not even close. And I just don't understand the value. And if we're seeing this, I just don't understand how professionals that watch 10 times or 100 times more tape than we do are seeing this. So it's a bit crazy. And you know what really compounds the issue is when Westbrook is out there, Brandon, but also Mason Plumlee. It's just bad. And that's one thing about Dallas. How many negative players has Dallas put on the floor in this series? One and a half. It's crazy. You cannot have two full offensive zeros out there, and that's what the Clippers have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the case that in some games PJ Washington feels that way, and Dante Exum really hasn't had much of a series either after he had a really good first half of the season for Dallas. But yeah, I mean, you look at the other guys. I mean, Derek Jones Jr. is hitting shots. Gafford, Lively, Kyrie, Luka, Maxi Kleba is hitting shots. Josh Green can hit a three or two, and Hardy can hit a couple of shots. I mean, Dallas
it's guys
has certainly
you have
guys
to at least respect. I mean, exactly. The tape is out. The jury's out on Westbrook. You just let him shoot, And if he makes them, you clap and you tip your cap, man. But I mean, they're just, it's not even disrespect. It's just a reality. Like they're not even closing out on him.
And it's not even a catch and shoot. It's a, I have the ball. All right. They're leaving me wide open. Do I take it? He thinks about it. Then he'll take it. Or he'll be like, no, I probably shouldn't do this. And then he'll put it on the floor and do something crazy. And so it's just, it doesn't make sense. And so the question is, what do the Clippers do? Because you brought up Plumlee as well. And Plumlee has not been good in this series. I think he had one good game of the five. And I think the number one thing you do there is you play Zumor. I think you absolutely need to play Zumor. There's no reason. You look today at this Knicks game that's going on as we record this podcast. And I don't think Dante DiVincenzo has come out of the ball game in this one. I mean, you look at the minutes. Yeah. There's 3 minutes left in the ball game as we record this. DiVincenzo's at 45 minutes. OG's at 42. Josh Hart's at 43. You look at the 76ers, and Embiid is at 37, Oubre 39, Maxey 40. Like, in the postseason, you play your guys 40 minutes. And I think that's what the treatment Zoo needs to first get, is he needs to play 40 minutes. So less Plumlee on the floor, and that means less Westbrook on the floor, because you play more of your other guys that are actual starters. And if you're going to go to the bench, you go to Norm Powell. So I think that's the number one fix. Number two is, I think you may want to see what Bones Highland's got to offer instead of Russell Westbrook, because at least he'll give a little bit on the offensive end in terms of that they'll have to honor the three ball. And I think Daniel Tice is another one that I think you got to honor the three ball. So I think you go with him instead of Plumlee, and you see how it works out. What do you think is the fix?
Yeah, I typically have wanted to stay away from Bones, because I just think the defensive issues are what they are, and giving Luka another target just seems unwise. But you know, you don't have anything that, I mean, you have things to lose. Obviously, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase that. Like, you have to go down with a little bit more offense to kind of match this firepower. I don't think you're going to stop Dallas. So I think you just try to maximize your offense and outscore them, as simple as that sounds. But, you know, that's what I would do. Just see if Bones is a bit of a spark plug. I don't hate the Tice idea. Anything to not see Plumlee up there, honestly, man. I mean, I was reading a lot of tweets. I think Shap was like, can't wait till I don't have to watch Mason Plumlee on this team anymore. I mean, you hate to be that way, but it's rough, man. It's rough. It just seems to me, maybe, am I right on this? But, like, it seems like the Clippers get really good minutes and games from these role players and these bench players like Mason Plumlee and Bones, but only in the years that they don't have a chance. Or like, remember last year against the Suns in that first round, like, Plumlee played pretty well for the most part, from what I remember. Norm Powell was on fire. It just seems like it never can come together in a series that they actually have a chance to win, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Plumlee did last night. I mean, he comes in and doesn't do much defensively. He tries to go after steals so he can get breakaways and a dunk. He finally got a steal, but he is cheating when he shouldn't cheat. And honestly, the most unforgivable sin of them all is that PG hits back-to-back threes to cut the deficit to 16, and Plumlee fouls Josh Green on a four-point play. I mean, for a four-point play, it's just, you can't be doing that at all. I mean, and then they go, all of a sudden, they go down by 20 after three quarters, and that's really all she wrote. And really nothing on offense came easy, and defense was garbage. And when things on offense are not coming easy, the answer is not more Russell Westbrook and Mason Plumlee. That is not the answer. And those two guys just are not providing enough in this series. And so Ty Lue's going to have to make adjustments. I'm very curious what he's going to do in game six. And the Clippers are certainly not out of this series, because frankly, I don't think Dallas is that good. I think Dallas is fine. I think the media attention that they're getting is unwarranted. It certainly helps going 16-2 in your final 18 games before you start pulling the starters in the final few games of the season, that you get the momentum and so everybody's talking about you. But Luka hasn't done a whole lot to impress me in this series. Kyrie is very good. But apart from those two guys, I just don't think they have a ton. I think that OKC, Minnesota, and Denver are all better than Dallas. And so I think the Clippers still have a shot in this series. I think it's more likely than not the Clippers lose tomorrow night. For people that are listening to this, it's possible it's going to be today, because you're probably listening to this on Friday. But nonetheless, I just don't think this team is that good. But the thing is that the margins are so thin in some of these games. I mean, you look back at game 2, the Clippers could have easily won that ball game. They could have easily gone up 2 games to nothing. I mean, they could be up seriously in this series going to game six, but they're not. And unfortunately, they just got too many weak points. Going back to the start of the podcast, it's a disappearing PG who doesn't want to be the alpha. It's James Harden, who is not the scorer he used to be. It's Amir Coffey, who's not much of a scoring threat. Russell Westbrook can't do anything offensively. Can't even do it at the rim because he can't shoot over 50% at the rim. You can't do anything with Mason Plumlee. It's really a lot of Zoo that's your only consistent player, and that's why the Clippers are currently down in the series.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I just think that they kind of blew their opportunity. I feel like a thunderstorm just coming from Dallas in terms of three, mm-hmm. or from 3-point range. I feel like they're just going to hit like 15 to 20 threes on Friday and put them out of their misery. But because it feels like that game, it feels like that kind of game is coming, right? Like neither of these teams have had dynamic offensive games for the most part. I mean, you know, hit or miss a couple of games, but or one game for each side. But just feel like it's been a dogfight of a series for both teams to kind of crawl out of. So I feel like Dallas is gonna have their offense unload a little bit. But you did mention, like, you know, you don't think Mavericks are that good. Honestly, I don't know if this is probably the coldest take of the year, but I think OKC is gonna dog walk whoever wins this series. Yeah. OKC is gonna destroy either of these teams.
Yeah, I agree. So the Clippers are in a bad spot. There's no doubt about that. And I mean, listen, nothing really summarizes the Clippers yesterday than PJ Tucker getting the ball for an easy layup and then deciding not to shoot it. Everybody made the joke at the time, but it's exactly what I texted a friend. It was exactly like Ben Simmons. You got the ball for an easy layup and he just didn't take it. And so you play PJ Tucker, you're clearly desperate, and it didn't work. And the Clippers are in a really bad spot right now, and they need James Harden and PG to show up. Mostly PG, though. I mean, the big question is, will PG want this one? And he even said yesterday, post-game, is that he doesn't really concern himself with the pressure anymore. He doesn't really feel that. He doesn't want to let down his teammates. So he wants to be there for his teammates. But everything else, it doesn't really matter to him. It just feels like he's so laissez-faire. And he's just the opposite of a guy like Kobe. Kobe's the first one that always comes to my mind in a situation like this. He is a dog. He is not going to let you lose. He is going to put up 35 shots, hell or high water. He is going down swinging. It just doesn't feel like Paul George is going down swinging. It feels like he's at the plate. He's taken strike one. He's taken strike two. And he's got the bat on his shoulders as the pitcher is coming to home plate to deliver strike three. And we'll see if he decides to take the bat off his shoulders or if he's going to watch it go by and the Clippers strike out.
We don't have to go long on this, but I do have a question for you. It's something I thought about last night watching the game.
Yeah.
How much do you think, because this has happened the last three postseasons, if I remember correctly, 21, 20. Yeah, so I guess last four postseasons. Gosh, that's crazy. Do you feel like that once Kawhi goes down, it's just all, you know, PG and all the guys, I know they still fight hard, they still believe they can win, but it's like internally, secretly, do you feel like it's just, you know, it gets the life sucked out of them? It's like, man, we know we can't win the title like this. We know, like, no matter if we beat this team, we know we're not going anywhere without Kawhi. So, I mean, honestly, it's like, it's kind of deflating. I get the sense that the team is still fighting hard, obviously, because they're professionals, but it's like, man, we don't have a shot. So maybe that affects them.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. It feels like it's the first game when you missed them in game one. It's all right, we can go out there, we can win without them. And then he's back for two games. All right, we got this, we can do it without him. And then you get this body blow like you did in game five. And that's why I feel like, yeah, they've got that body blow, and I just don't know if they're going to get up off the mat. It feels like, all right, yeah, we're down 3-2. We don't have Kawhi. Really, realistically, how far are we getting? But we'll see. We'll see how much fight this team has. And this team is the funny thing about this, Shane, is that the Clippers have gone down so many times in games by like 20+, and you've wanted to write them off, and they've come back to win. So as much as you want to say that maybe this team thinks, hey, yeah, season's over, we're not going to win at all, I think most of these guys probably think they've got a shot. And they think they've got a shot because they've been down so many times this season in games and come back and won. And they were without Kawhi in game one, and they won. They're without Kawhi in game four and won. So it's possible they still think they have a shot. And they may play better on the road. That's why I think they certainly have a shot to win tomorrow and force a game seven. But talent-wise, they just need PG to really show up, and he needs to set the set the pace and the tempo for this team, and then the other guys will follow.
If they're not up 10 at half, it's a bleak ending for me. I think they got to come out on fire.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think they need to have a good start as well. Good point for sure. All right, that'll do it for this pod. Don't want to make it too long. Want to give people a chance to listen, because by the time you listen to this, it is probably Friday, and you are ready for game number 6. Tonight, 6:30 Pacific time, the Clippers will take the floor in Dallas. Shane Young at YoungNBA on Twitter/X. Shane, appreciate my guy. Always fun having you on.
Always great, man. Hopefully next time we'll have the trio here.
Yes, yes. And perhaps there'll be four of them with a baby on the lap of Matt Warren that will join us, as baby Matt Warren will join the podcast with perhaps a couple of whimpers and cries or whatever it is. So again, a big congratulations to Matt and his family for the beautiful new girl that has joined their clan. I'm Brandon Marcus at BD Marcus on X/Twitter. Like I said, Shane Young at YoungNBA. If you can give us a 5-star rating, review the podcast, always does help as we continue to grow this podcast. So for Shane, for Matt and his new child, and for myself, Brandon, until next time, go Clips.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.